117. Champion with 9 Shadows. Beware the otherworlders, the traitors, those with tongues of sweetness but with minds that lust for blood. Do not take them in. Do not give them succor. Well were they named void bringers, for they brought the void, the empty pit that sucks in emotion, a new god, their god. From the Aayla Steely. Dalinar stepped onto the rubble, boots scraping stone. The air felt too still out here near the red storm. Stagnant. How could the air be so motionless? Amaram's army hesitated outside the gap. Some men had already gotten in, but the bulk had been forming up to wait their turn. When you rushed a city like this, you wanted to be careful not to push your own forces too hard from behind, lest you crush them up against the enemy. These kept uneven ranks, snarling, eyes red. More telling, they ignored the wealth at their feet. A field of spheres and gemstones, all done, that had been thrown out onto this plain by the thunderclast that destroyed the reserve. They wanted blood instead. Dalinar could taste their lust for the fight, the challenge. What held them back? Twin thunderclasts stomped toward the wall. A red haze drifted among the men. Images of war and death, a deadly storm. Dalinar faced it alone. One man. All that remained of a broken dream.
So, a sudden voice said from his right, what's the plan?
Dalinar frowned, then looked down to find a Reshi girl with long hair dressed in a simple shirt and trousers.
Lift?
Dalinar asked in Azish. Didn't you leave?
Sure did. What's wrong with your army?
They're his now.
Did you forget to feed them?
Dalinar glanced at the soldiers, standing in ranks that felt more like packs than they did true battle formations.
Perhaps I didn't try hard enough.
Were you thinking you'd fight them all on your own? Lift said. With a book?
There is someone else for me to fight here.
With the book?
Yes.
She shook her head.
Sure. All right. Why not? What do you want me to do?
The girl didn't match the conventional ideal of a Night Radiant. Not even 5 feet tall, thin and wiry, she looked more urchin than soldier. She was also all he had.
Do you have a weapon? He asked.
Nope. Can't read.
Can't?
Dalinar looked down at his book.
I meant a real weapon, Lift.
Oh, yeah, I've got one of those.
She thrust her hand to the side. Mist formed into a small glittering shard blade. Or, no, it was just a pole. A silver pole with a rudimentary crossguard. Lift shrugged.
Windle doesn't like hurting people.
Doesn't like?
Dalinar blinked.
What kind of world did he live in where swords didn't like hurting people? A fused escaped from this city a short time ago, Dalinar said, carrying an enormous ruby. I don't know why they wanted it, and I'd rather not find out. Can you steal it back?
Sure. Easy.
You'll find it with a fused who can move with a power similar to your own. A woman.
Like I said, easy.
Easy? I think you might find...
Relax, Grandpa. Steal the rock. I can do that.
She took a deep breath, then exploded with stormlight. Her eyes turned a pearly glowing white.
It's just us two, then?
Yes.
Right. Good luck with the army.
Dalinar looked back at the soldiers, where a figure materialized, wearing gold, holding a scepter like a cane.
It's not the army that worries me, Dalinar said.
But Lift had already scampered away, hugging the wall and running quickly to round the outside of the army. Odium strolled up to Dalinar, trailed by a handful of fused, plus the woman Dalinar had sucked into his visions, and a shadowy spren that looked like it was made of twisting smoke.
What was that?
Odium didn't address Dalinar at first, but instead turned to his fused.
Tell Yusha I want her to stay out here and guard the prison. Kygarnas did well destroying the wall. Tell her to return to the city and climb toward the Oathgate. If the Tissak can't secure it, she is to destroy the device and recover its gemstones. We can rebuild it as long as the Spren aren't compromised.
Two fused left, each running toward one of the towering thunderclasts. Odium placed both hands on the top of his scepter and smiled at Dalinar.
Well, friend, here we are, and the time has arrived. Are you ready?
Yes, Dalinar said.
Good, good. Let us begin.
The two fused hovered near Adolin, out of easy reach, admiring Shallan's illusory handiwork. He did his best to blend in, waving his harpoon around crazily. He wasn't sure where Syl had gone, but Pattern seemed to be enjoying himself, humming pleasantly and swinging a glass branch. One of the fused nudged the other, then pointed at Shallan, whom they'd just noticed. Neither appeared worried that she'd open the Oath Gate, which was a bad sign. What did they know about the device that Adolin's team did not? The fused turned from Shallan and continued a conversation in a language Adolin couldn't understand. One pointed at each illusion in turn, then thrust with his spear. The other shook her head, and Adolin could almost interpret her answer. We tried stabbing each one, they keep mixing about, so it's hard to keep track. Instead, the female took out a knife and cut her hand, then flung it toward the illusions. Orange blood fell through the illusions, leaving no stain but splattered against Adolin's cheek. Adolin felt his heart flutter, and he tried to covertly wipe the blood off, but the female gestured toward him with a satisfied grin. The male saluted her with a finger to his head, then lowered his lance and flew straight toward Adolin.
Damnation.
Adolin scrambled away, passing through an illusion of Captain Notum and causing it to diffuse. It formed back together, then blew apart a second later as the fused soared through it, lance pointed at Adolin's back. Adolin spun and flung his harpoon up to block, deflecting the lance, but the fused still smashed into him, tossing him backward. Adolin hit the stone bridge hard, smacking his head, seeing stars. Vision swimming, he reached for his harpoon, but the fused slapped the weapon away with the butt of his lance. The creature then alighted softly on the bridge, billowing robes settling. Adolin yanked out his belt knife, then forced himself to his feet, unsteady. The fused lowered its lance to a two-handed underarm grip, then waited. Knife against spear. Adolin breathed in and out, worried about the other fused who had gone for Shallan. He tried to dredge up Zahel's lessons, remembering days in the practice yard running this exact exchange. Yakimov had refused the training, laughing at the idea that a shardbearer would ever fight knife to spear. Adolin flipped the knife to grip it point down, then held it forward so he could deflect the spear thrusts. Zahel whispered to him, "Wait until the enemy thrusts with the spear, deflect it or dodge it, then grab the spear with your left hand. Pull yourself close enough to ram the knife into the enemy's neck." Right. He could do that. He'd died 7 times out of 10 doing it against Zahel, of course.
"Winds bless you anyway, you old axe hound," he thought.
Adolin stepped in, testing and waiting for the thrust. When it came, Adolin shoved the lance's point aside with his knife, then grabbed at. The enemy floated backward in an unnatural motion, too fast. No ordinary human could have moved in such a way. Adolin stumbled, trying to reassess. The fused idly brought the lance back around, then fluidly rammed it right through Adolin's stomach. Adolin gasped at the sharp spike of pain, doubling over, feeling blood on his hands. The fused seemed almost bored as he yanked the lance out, the tip glistening red with Adolin's blood, then dropped the weapon. The creature landed and instead unsheathed a wicked-looking sword. He advanced, slapped away Adolin's weak attempt at a parry, and raised the sword to strike. Someone leaped onto the fused from behind. A figure in tattered clothing, a scrabbling, angry woman with brown vines instead of skin and scratched-out eyes. Adolin gaped as his deadeye raked long nails across the fused's face, causing him to stumble backward, humming, of all things. He rammed his sword into the Spren's chest, but it didn't faze her in the least. She just let out a screech like the one she'd made at Adolin when he'd tried to summon his blade and kept attacking. Adolin shook himself.
"Flee, idiot."
Holding his wounded gut, each step causing a shock of pain, he lurched across the bridge toward Shallan.
Employing subterfuge will not deceive us or weaken our resolve, Lightweaver, the Guardian said. For indeed, this is not a matter of decision, but one of nature. The path remains closed.
Shallan let the illusion melt around her, then slumped down, exhausted. She'd tried pleading, cajoling, yelling, and even lightweaving. It was no use. She had failed. Her illusions on the bridge were wavering and vanishing, their stormlight running out. Through them shot a fused, trailing dark energy, lance leveled directly toward Shallan. She dove to the side, barely getting out of the way. The creature passed in a whoosh, then slowed and turned for another pass. Shallan leaped to her feet first. Pattern! She yelled, sweeping her hands forward by instinct, trying to summon the blade. A part of her was impressed, that was her reaction. Adolin would be proud. It didn't work, of course. Pattern shouted in apology from the bridge, panicked. And yet in that moment, facing the enemy bearing down its lance pointed at her heart, Shallan felt something. Pattern, or something like him, just beyond her mental reach. On the other side, and if she could just tug on it, feed it. She screamed as stormlight flowed through her, raging in her veins, reaching towards something in her pocket. A wall appeared in front of her. Shallan gasped. A sickening smack from the other side of the wall indicated that the fused had collided with it. A wall. A storming wall of worked stones, broken at the sides. Shallan looked down and found that her pocket, she was still wearing Vale's white trousers, was connected to the strange wall. What, on Roshar? She pulled out her small knife and sawed the pocket free, then stumbled back. In the center of the wall was a small bead, melded into the stone. That's the bead I used to cross the sea down below, Shallan thought. What she'd done felt like soul casting, yet different. Pattern ran up to her, humming as he left the bridge. Where were Adolin and Syl? I took the soul of the wall, Shallan said, and then made its physical form appear on this side. I think these beads are more minds than souls, but you did manifest it here. Very nice, though your touch is unpracticed. It will not stay for long. The edges were already starting to unravel to smoke. A scraping sound on the other side indicated that the fused had not been defeated, merely stunned. Shallan turned from it and scrambled over the bridge, away from the towering sentinels. She passed some of her illusions and recovered a little of their stormlight. Now where was Adolin? Bleeding? Shallan dashed over and grabbed him by the arm, trying to keep him upright as he stumbled. It's just a little cut, he said. Blood seeped out between his fingers, which were pressed to his gut, right below the navel. The back of his uniform was bloody, too. Just a little cut? Adolin, you... No time, he said, leaning against her. He nodded toward the fused she'd fought, who rose into the air over Shallan's wall. The other one is back behind me somewhere. Could be on us at any moment. Kaladin, Shallan said. Where? Pattern said, pointing. He ran out of stormlight and fell into the beads over that way. Great. Take a deep breath, Shallan said to Adolin, then pulled him off the bridge with her and leaped for the beads. Lift became awesome. Her powers manifested as the ability to slide across objects without truly touching them. She could become really, really slick, which was handy, because soldiers tried to snatch her as she rounded the Alethi army. They grabbed at her unbuttoned overshirt, her arm, her hair. They couldn't hold her. She just slid away, It was like they were trying to grab hold of a song. She burst from their ranks and fell to her knees, which she'd slicked up real good. That meant she kept going, sliding on her knees away from the men with the glowing red eyes. Windle, who she knew by now was almost certainly not a void-bringer, was a little snaking line of green beside her. He looked like a fast-growing vine, jutting with small crystals here and there. "Oh, I don't like this," he said.
"You don't like nothing."
"Now, that is not true, mistress. I like that nice town we passed back in Aesir.
The one that was deserted?
So peaceful." There, Lift thought, picking out a real void bringer. The type that looked like Parshman, only big and scary. This one was a woman and moved across the rocks smoothly, like she was awesome too.
"I've always wondered," Lift said. "Do you suppose they got those marble colorings on all their parts?"
"Mistress, does it matter?"
"Maybe not now," Lift admitted, glancing at the red storm.
She kept her legs slick, but her hands not slick, which let her paddle and steer herself. Going about on your knees didn't look as devious standing up, but when she tried being awesome while standing, she usually ended up crashed against a rock with her butt in the air. That fused did seem to be carrying something large in one hand, like a big gemstone. Lift paddled in that direction, which was taking her dangerously close to that Parshman army and their ships. Still, she got up pretty close before the Voidbringer woman turned and noticed. Lift slid to a halt, letting her stormlight run out. Her stomach growled, so she took a bite of some jerky she'd found in her guard's pocket. The Voidbringer said something in a sing-song voice, hefting the enormous ruby. It didn't have any stormlight, which was good, since one that big would have been bright. Like redder and brighter than Gox's face when Lift told him about how babies were made.
He should know stuff like that already. He'd been a starving thief. Hadn't he known any whores or anything?
Anyway, how to get that ruby? The Voidbringers spoke again, and while Lift couldn't figure out the words, she couldn't help feeling that the Voidbringers sounded amused. The woman pushed off with one foot, then slid on the other, easy as if she were standing on oil. She coasted for a second, then looked over her shoulder and grinned before kicking off and sliding to the left, casually moving with a grace that made Lift seem super stupid.
"Well, starve me," Lift said. "She's more awesome than I am."
"Do you have to use that term?" Windle asked.
"Yes, she appears to be able to access the surge of—"
"Shut it," Lift said. "Can you follow her?"
"I might leave you behind."
"I'll keep up."
"Maybe."
"You follow her. I'll follow you."
Windle sighed, but obeyed, streaking off after the Voidbringer. Lift followed, paddling on her knees, feeling like a pig trying to imitate a professional dancer.
"You must choose, Zeth's son, Naturo," Nin said. "The Skybreakers will swear to the Dawnsingers and their law. And you? Will you join us?"
Wind rippled Zeth's clothing. All those years ago, he'd been correct. The Voidbringers had returned. Now he was to simply accept their rule?
"I don't trust myself, Aboshi," Zeth whispered. "I cannot see the right any longer. My own decisions are not trustworthy."
"Yes," Nin said, nodding, hands clasped behind his back. "Our minds are fallible. This is why we must pick something external to follow. Only in strict adherence to a code can we approximate justice." Zeth inspected the battlefield far below.
"When are we going to actually fight someone?" asked the sword on his back. "You sure do like to talk. Even more than Vasher, and he could go on and on and on."
"Aboshi," Zeth said.
When I say the third ideal, can I choose a person as the thing I obey, instead of the law?
Yes. Some of the Skybreakers have chosen to follow me, and I suspect that will make the transition to obeying the Dawnsingers easier for them. I would not suggest it. I feel that I'm getting worse.
A man in blue barred the way into the city below. He confronted something else, a force that Zeth could just barely sense, a hidden fire.
You followed men before, Nin continued. They caused your pain, Zeth, son Naturo. Your agony is because you did not follow something unchanging and pure. You picked men instead of an ideal.
Or, Zeth said, perhaps I was simply forced to follow the wrong men.
Kaladin thrashed in the beads, suffocating, coughing. He wasn't that deep, but which way was out? Which way was out? Frantic, he tried to swim toward the surface, but the beads didn't move like water, and he couldn't propel himself. Beads slipped into his mouth, pushed at his skin, pulled at him like an invisible hand, trying to drag him farther and farther into the depths, away from the light, away from the wind. His fingers brushed something warm and soft among the beads. He thrashed, trying to find it again, and a hand seized his arm. He brought his other arm around and grabbed hold of a thin wrist. Another hand took him by the front of the coat, pulling him away from the darkness, and he stumbled, finding purchase on the bottom of the sea. Lungs burning, he followed, step by step, eventually bursting from the beads to find Syl pulling him by the front of the coat. She led him up the bank, where he collapsed in a heap, spitting out spheres and wheezing. The fused he'd been fighting landed on the Oathgate platform near the two they'd left behind. As Kaladin was recovering his breath, beads nearby pulled back, revealing Shallan, Adolin, and Pattern crossing the seafloor through some kind of passage she'd made. A hallway in the depths? She was growing in her ability to manipulate the beads. Adolin was wounded. Kaladin gritted his teeth, forcing himself to his feet and stumbling over to help Shallan get the prince up onto the shore. The prince lay on his back, cursing softly, holding his gut with bloodied hands.
Let me see it, Kaladin said, prying Adolin's fingers out of the way. The blood, Shallan started. The blood is the least of his worries, Kaladin said, prodding at the wound. He's not going to bleed out from a gut wound anytime soon. But sepsis is another story. And if internal organs got cut...
Leave me,
Adolin said, coughing.
Leave you to go where? Kaladin said, moving his fingers in the wound.
Storms, the intestines were cut.
I'm out of stormlight.
Shallan's glow faded.
That was the last of what I had.
Syl gripped Kaladin's shoulder, looking toward the fused who launched up and flew toward them, lances held high. Pattern hummed softly, nervously.
What do we do then? Shallan asked.
No, Kaladin thought.
Give me your knife,
Adolin said, trying to sit up.
It can't be the end. Adolin, no, rest. Maybe we can surrender.
I can't fail him.
Kaladin looked over his shoulder towards Syl, who held him lightly by the arm. She nodded.
The words, Kaladin.
Emaram's soldiers parted around Dalinar, flooding into the city. They ignored him, and unfortunately he had to ignore them.
So, child,
Odium nodded toward the city and took Dalinar by the shoulder.
You did something marvelous in forging that coalition. You should feel proud. I'm certainly proud.
How could Dalinar fight this thing, who thought of every possibility, who planned for every outcome? How could he face something so vast, so incredible? Touching it, Dalinar could sense it stretching into infinity, permeating the land, the people, the sky, and the stone. He would break, go insane if he tried to comprehend this being, and somehow he had to defeat it?
Convince him that he can lose, the Almighty had said in vision. Appoint a champion. He will take that chance. This is the best advice I can give you. Honor had been slain, resisting this thing. Dalinar licked his lips.
A test of champions, he said to Odium. I demand that we clash over this world.
For what purpose? Odium asked.
Killing us won't free you, will it? Dalinar said. You could rule us or destroy us, but either way, you'd still be trapped here.
Nearby, one of the Thunderclasts climbed over the wall and entered the city. The other stayed behind, stomping around near the rearguard of the army.
A contest, Dalinar said to Odium. Your freedom if you win, our lives if humans win.
Be careful what you request, Dalinar Kolin. As bondsmith, you can offer this deal, but is this truly what you wish of me?
Was it?
Windle followed the Voidbringer, and Lift followed him. They slipped back among the men of the human army. The front ranks were pouring into the city, but the opening wasn't big enough for them to all go at once. Most waited out here for their turn, cursing and grumbling at the delay. They took swipes at Lift as she tried to follow the trail of vines Windle left. Being little helped her avoid them, fortunately. She liked being little. Little people could squeeze into places others couldn't, and could go unnoticed. She wasn't supposed to get any older. The Night Watcher had promised her she wouldn't. The Night Watcher had lied. Just like a starving human would have. Lift shook her head and slipped between the legs of a soldier. Being little was nice, but it was hard not to feel like every man was a mountain towering overhead. They smashed weapons about her, speaking guttural Alethi curses. I can't do this on my knees, she thought as a sword chopped close to her shirt. I have to be like her. I have to be free. Lift zipped over the side of a small rise in the rock and managed to land on her feet. She ran for a moment, then slicked the bottoms of her feet and went into a slide. The Voidbringer woman passed ahead. She didn't slip and fall, but performed the strange walking motion, one that let her control her smooth glide. Lift tried to do the same. She trusted in her awesomeness, her stormlight, to sustain her as she held her breath. Men cursed around her, but sounds slid off Lift as she coated herself in light. The wind itself couldn't touch her. She'd been here before. She'd held for a beautiful moment between crashes, sliding on bare feet, moving free, untouched, like she was gliding between worlds. She could do it. She could... Something crashed to the ground nearby, crushing several soldiers, throwing Lift off balance and sending her into a heap. She slid to a stop and rolled over, looking up at one of the huge stone monsters. The skeletal thing raised a spiked hand and slammed it down. Lift threw herself out of the way, but the shaking from the impact sent her sprawling again. Soldiers nearby didn't seem to care that their fellows had been crushed. Eyes glowing, they scrambled for her, as if it were a contest to see who could kill her first. Her only choice was to dodge toward the stone monster. Maybe she could get so close that it... The creature pounded again, mashing three soldiers, but also slamming into Lift. The blow snapped her legs in the blink of an eye, then crushed her lower half, sending her into a screaming fit of pain. Eyes watering, she curled up on the ground. Heal. Heal. Just had to weather the pain. Just had to... Stones ground against one another overhead. She blinked away tears, looking up at the creature raising its spike high in the sky toward the sun, which was slipping behind the clouds of the deadly storm. Mistress, Windle said. His vines climbed over her as if trying to cradle her. Oh, mistress, summon me as a sword. The pain in her legs started to fade. Too slowly, she was growing hungry again, her stormlight running low. She summoned Windle as a rod, twisting against the pain and holding him toward the monster, her eyes watering with the effort. An explosion of light appeared overhead, a ball of expanding radiance. Something dropped from the middle of it, trailing smoke both black and white, glowing like a star. "Mother," Windle said, "what is..." As the monster raised its fist to strike Lift, the spear of light hit the creature in the head and cut straight through. It divided the enormous thing in two, sending out an explosion of black smoke. The halves of the monster fell to the sides, crashing into the stone, then burned away, evaporating into blackness. Soldiers cursed and coughed, backing up as something resolved in the center of the tempest. A figure in the smoke, glowing white, and holding a jet-black shard blade that seemed to feed on the smoke, sucking it in, then letting it pour down beneath itself as a liquid blackness. White and black. A man with a shaved head, eyes glowing a light gray, stormlight rising from him. He straightened and strode through the smoke, leaving an afterimage behind. Lift had seen this man before. The assassin in white. Murderer. And apparently savior. He stopped beside her.
"The Blackthorn assigned you a task?"
Yeah, Lift said, wiggling her toes, which seemed to be working again. "There's a Voidbringer who stole a large ruby. I'm supposed to get it back."
"Then stand,"
the assassin said, raising his strange shard blade toward the enemy soldiers.
"Our master has given us a task. We shall see it completed."
Navani scrambled across the top of the wall, alone except for crushed corpses. "Dalinar, don't you dare become a martyr," she thought, reaching the stairwell. She pulled open the door at the top and started down the dark steps. What was he thinking? Facing an entire army on his own? He wasn't a young man in his prime, outfitted in shard plate. She fumbled for a sphere in her safe pouch, then eventually undid the clasp on her arm fabrial instead, using its light to guide her down the steps and into the room at the base. Where had Fen and... A hand grabbed her, pulling her to the side and slamming her against the wall. Fen and Kamakal lay here, gagged, bound tightly. A pair of men in forest green, eyes glowing red, held knives to them. A third one, wearing the knots of a captain, pressed Navani against the wall.
"What a handsome reward you'll earn me," the man hissed at Navani. "Two queens! Bright Lord Amaram will enjoy this gift. That almost makes up for not being able to kill you personally, as justice for what your husband did to Bright Lord Sadeus."
Ash stumbled to a stop before a brazier. It bore delicate metalwork around the rim, a finer piece than one expected to find in such a common location. This improvised camp was where the Alethi troops had bivouacked while repairing the city. It clogged multiple streets and squares of the low ward. The unlit brazier that had stopped Ash was in front of a tent, and had perhaps been used for warmth on cold Thalen nights. 10 figures ringed the bowl. Her fingers itched. She couldn't move on, no matter how desperate her task, until she'd done it. She seized the bowl and turned it until she found the woman depicting her, marked by the iconography of the brush and the mask, symbols of creativity, pure absurdity. She pulled out her knife and sawed at the metal until she'd managed to scratch out the face. Good enough. Good enough. She dropped the brazier. Keep going. What that man Moraes had told her had better be true. If he had lied. The large tent near the wall was completely unguarded, though soldiers had run past her a short time ago, eyes glowing with the light of corrupted investiture. Odium has learned to possess men. A dark, dangerous day. He'd always been able to tempt them to fight for him, but sending Spren to bond with them? Terrible. And how had he managed to start a storm of his own? Well, this land was finally doomed. And Ash? Ash couldn't find it inside herself to care any longer. She pushed into the tent, forcibly keeping herself from looking at the rug in case it bore depictions of the heralds. There she found him, sitting alone in the dim light, staring ahead sightlessly. Dark skin, even darker than hers, and a muscled physique. A king, for all the fact that he'd never worn a crown. He was the one of the ten who was never supposed to have borne their burden. And he'd borne it the longest anyway. "Taln," she whispered.
Renarin Kolin knew he wasn't actually a Knight Radiant. Gliss had once been a different kind of Spren, but something had changed him, corrupted him. Gliss didn't remember that very well. It had happened before they had formed their bond. Now neither knew what they'd become. Renarin could feel the Spren trembling inside him, hiding and whispering about the danger. Jasnah had found them. Renarin had seen that coming. He knelt in the ancient temple of Pelaya, and to his eyes it was full of colors. 1,000 panes of stained glass sprouted on the walls, combining and melting together, creating a panorama. He saw himself coming to Thalen City earlier in the day. He saw Dalinar talking to the monarchs, and then he saw them turning against him.
"She will hurt us. She will hurt us."
"I know, Gliss," he whispered, turning toward a specific section of stained glass. This showed Renarin kneeling on the floor of the temple. In the sequence of stained glass panels, Jasnah approached him from behind, sword raised. And then she struck him down. Renarin couldn't control what he saw or when he saw it. He had learned to read so he could understand the numbers and words that appeared under some of the images. They had shown him when the Everstorm would come. They had shown him how to find the hidden compartments in Urethiru. Now they showed his death. The future. Renarin could see what was forbidden. He wrenched his eyes away from the glass pane, showing himself and Jasnah, turning toward one even worse. In it, his father knelt before a god of gold and white.
"No, father," Renarin whispered. "Please, not that. Don't do it."
"He will not be resisted," Gliss said. "My sorrow, Renarin. I will give you my sorrow."
A pair of glory Spren swung down from the skies, golden spheres. They floated and spun around Dalinar, brilliant like drops of sunlight.
"Yes," Dalinar said. "This is what I wish."
"You wish a contest of champions," Odium repeated. "This is your true desire, not forced upon you. You are not beguiled or tricked in any way."
"A contest of champions, for the fate of Roshar."
"Very well," Odium said, then sighed softly. "I agree."
"That easily?"
"Oh, I assure you, this won't be easy."
Odium raised his eyebrows in an open, inviting way, a concerned expression.
"I have chosen my champion already. I've been preparing him for a long, long time."
"Amaram."
"Him? A passionate man, yes, but hardly suited to this task? No. I need someone who dominates a battlefield like the sun dominates the sky."
The thrill suddenly returned to Dalinar. The red mist, which had been fading, roared back to life. Images filled his mind, memories of his youth spent fighting.
"I need someone stronger than Amaram," Odium whispered. "No, a man who will win no matter the cost."
The thrill overwhelmed Dalinar, choking him.
"A man who has served me all his life. A man I trust. I believe I warned you that I knew you'd make the right decision. And now, here we are." "No." "Take a deep breath, my friend," Odium whispered.
I'm afraid that this will hurt.